Hello, this is Penny, broadcasting from the Audible Local Ledger, an affiliate station of the Massachusetts Radio Reading Service. I will be reading from the Standard Times today, and today is Wednesday, March 7th, 2018. On the front page, residents share thoughts on downtown/waterfront parking. Michael Bonner wrote this out of New Bedford. They stopped for the Kit Kats and hot chocolate and stayed for the parking chatter on Tuesday. Stantec, an international design and consulting firm, staked claim to the corner of Purchase and Middle Streets with a portable blue canopy. Candy scattered across a map of New Bedford's downtown and waterfront as representatives from the organization peppered people migrating through the city their opinions on parking. The city, along with Mass Development and the Harbor Development Commission, are funding the study in hopes of improving any issues experienced by residents, visitors, and businesses. Quote, "One of the biggest things New Bedford can do to improve the parking is provide more spaces and opportunities for parking," end of quote. City resident Milford James III said, quote, "Also, provide new technology in the garage and throughout the cities so it's, quote, easier to pay," end of quote. Stantec provided a board with possible suggestions that allowed participants to place stickers on the topics most important to them. Those who stopped cited lack of parking spaces as the biggest issue plaguing the city's parking scene. A call for increased time limits on the meters closely rivaled the complaint regarding lack of spaces. While it wasn't listed, numerous people said the enforcement of the meters is too strict. Quote, "Sometimes I come here to the pharmacy, you can't find a parking place. To the clinic, you can't find a parking space," end of quote. New Bedford resident Angela Cancel said, quote, "You got to park all the way down at the Salvation Army or up the street more. Sometimes you park double parking and you get a ticket," end of quote. The board also offered a, quote, "What are we missing?" end of quote section, which included two handwritten ideas. Lower the price of monthly parking passes in the garage and offer a shuttle from the garage throughout downtown. Other suggestions offered by those walking through downtown involved offering shareable bicycle stands that would allow an alternative form of transportation. Others said improved lighting is required throughout the city, both including in the garages. The Elm Street garage is currently undergoing a renovation that would improve the lighting. Quote, "I walk everywhere when I'm not on my bike, and there's a lot of alleyways and side streets that aren't lit up at all, and that's really dangerous," end of quote. New Bedford resident Justin Quinton said, quote, "There could be people there. There could be all kinds of shady things going on. It's just not safe. It's a safety issue," end of quote. The conversation didn't conclude on the sidewalk. It carried into a second session at UMass Dartmouth's Star Store in the evening. Online, the discussion won't end for a couple of months. Any resident or visitor of New Bedford is encouraged to partake in an online survey about parking in the city. It can be found here at newbedford-ma.gov/parking-survey. The library proposals are sought from nonprofits. This is from Dartmouth. The Select Board unanimously approved another request for nonprofit proposals for the Old Southworth Library. The board would accept proposals from any nonprofit, not just the one that's been looking to occupy the building at 404 Elm Street. The Dartmouth Cultural Center, Inc., went before the board Monday prior to March 15 a deadline previously given to present a proposal. According to Kathleen Del Sordo, the organization's facilitator, the nonprofit and its attorney believe a zoning change from general residence wouldn't be warranted. However, legal opinion from town council indicated some issues in terms of current zoning allowing the proposed cultural center use, said Greg Barnes, who is the interim co-town administrator. The board voted to accept requests for proposals last year, but didn't award any. Del Sordo said the organization is prepared to have a proposal submitted to the board by March 15. She also noted the organization is about halfway to its $18,000 goal, which is the amount of money the town previously requested to lease the building per year. The nonprofit raised about $3,500 from a February fundraiser. Amy Chivaroli wrote this article. And now we have another article. Is a taser used in arrest of a 29-year-old in New Bedford? And this is out of New Bedford. Police arrested a 29-year-old man on warrants Monday afternoon after a brief foot chase in the city's North End. A little after 1 p.m., police tried to arrest Patrick Joseph Drew at his apartment at 1190 Pleasant Street on outstanding warrants related to motor vehicle infractions. He resisted and ran from the officers, police said. Police caught up to Drew, used a taser to help detain him, said police spokesman Lieutenant Nathaniel Rodriguez. Drew and an officer sustained injuries that, quote, did not appear serious, end quote. Drew was arrested on three warrants, assault and battery on a police officer, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace, according to police logs. Now we have an article to set your goals high. UMD alumnus on call from space. Amy Chivaroli wrote this out of Dartmouth. 8-year-old Samuel Orvalli said one of the things he wants to be is an astronaut. Tuesday afternoon, he got to ask a question of astronaut and UMass Dartmouth alumnus, 87, Scott Tingle, who was aboard the International Space Station. Through a Skype call displayed on a screen inside the main auditorium at the campus center at the university, UMass Dartmouth students and staff got to ask Tingle about space life. Orvalli, an Alma Del Mar charter school student, was among fellow third graders who were learning about space. But he was the only one who stepped up to the podium to ask Tingle a question. Quote, what happened in your life that made you want to become an astronaut, end of quote, Orvalli asked. For Tingle, donning a UMass Dartmouth t-shirt with the university banner behind him, the answer was simple. Well, quote, well, our country walked on the moon. That's what happened, end of quote. Asked by Chancellor Dr. Robert Johnson what advice he'd offer to the class of 2018, Tingle said, quote, set your goals high. Pick the hard jobs. Don't be afraid to work hard. You will succeed. Just go for it, end of quote. Before the call was made, Johnson called Tingle, quote, a success story for the ages, end of quote, noting his, quote, dedication, passion, and follow through, end of quote. The special guest that afternoon that Tingle didn't expect was his mother, Sheila Tingle. Quote, will you please show us your best microgravity trip or flip, end of quote, she asked. And Tingle flipped to put his feet towards the ceiling while the audience cheered and clapped. Sheila of Randolph told the Standard Times she gets to talk to her son frequently. But when asked how it feels to see him on the big screen in space, she said, it's exciting. no matter how many times I see him, end of quote. Quote, it's all he ever wanted, and it makes me very proud to see he's accomplished his goal, end of quote, she said. Tingle said the night before he had lasagna, and that morning he had oatmeal with apples and cinnamon. Quote, my diet is probably a lot healthier up here than it is at home, end of quote, he said. He admitted he misses running water, quote, the water doesn't flow, it just floats, end of quote, he noted. Asked by UMass Dartmouth staff member Jamie Jacquart how seeing Earth from space has affected him, Tingle said, quote, we humans are really lucky. We've got a beautiful place to live, end of quote. Quote, people are people, end of quote, he added, quote again, we all need the same things to survive. One of those things we need is each other. Robert Small is chosen as the next Rochester police chief. Michael DeSicchio wrote this out of Rochester. The selectmen have chosen police sergeant Robert Small as the town's new police chief. Selectman Greenwood Hartley said the board Monday night unanimously approved Small to replace retiring chief Paul McGee. He said Small's contract, including his salary, have yet to be worked out. Small was the first and only candidate to be interviewed for the position. McGee, the chief since 2003, announced last September that he will retire September 14. The selectmen decided to seek interested candidates for the position within the department before advertising the opening publicly. Small has been a Rochester police officer since 1998. He became a sergeant in 2013. His credentials within the department include having served as lead instructor of its RAD class, which is Rape Aggression Defense, and this class is for women, since it was first offered 14 years ago. Holder of a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Western New England College, he earned a law degree from the Southern New England College School of Law and passed the bar exam in 2009. A suspect is held without bail in a fatal hit and run. Kurt Brown and Jeanette Barnes wrote this, and this is out of New Bedford. A 58-year-old former California man was ordered held without bail in connection with Saturday night's fatal hit-and-run crash that killed Stasha Lynn Ferrier on State Road in Dartmouth. Natalie Vieira was ordered held late Tuesday afternoon for a dangerousness hearing by Judge Franco J. Goborn II in New Bedford District Court. The hearing, requested by prosecutors, will be held Thursday. Although Vieira's legal first name is Natalie, he is transgender and identified as a male, according to Greg Melody, the spokesman for Bristol County District Attorney Thomas M. Quinn III. The suspect goes by the names Nate or Marcos, Melody said. Vieira is being detained in a medical unit at the Bristol County House of Correction until Tuesday, when he will be evaluated and classified, according to John Darling, spokesman for Bristol County Sheriff Thomas M. Hodgson. Vieira is charged with leaving the scene of personal industry and personal injury and death, unlicensed operation of a motor vehicle, operating an unregistered vehicle, Melody said. Not guilty pleas were entered in his behalf. Vieira told Dartmouth and State Police that he'd left Lizzie's Liquors on State Road and struck what he said was a light pole, and he did not stop. Prosecutor Matt Sylvia told the court, and when asked by investigators why he continued driving, he said he panicked and went home. Police received multiple tips after releasing a press release saying they were looking for a Chevrolet Uplander with front passenger side damage, believed to have been involved in the fatal accident about 7 p.m. Saturday in the area of 653 State Road in Dartmouth, the prosecutor said. The public appeal for information led police to Mike's auto body in Fall River on Tuesday, where they found the Chevrolet Uplander with damage to the front headlight, the prosecutor said. Police went to 103 Highland Avenue, Westport, spoke to Rosa Pixototo, who acknowledged having the vehicle towed there. She said Vieira, who is her cousin, said he hit something last weekend, the prosecutor said. Sylvia told the court that police are continuing their investigation of the fatal crash. The arraignment was not held until about 5 p.m. Tuesday, and court documents were not available because the clerk's office was closed for the day. State and local police arrested Natalie Vieira on Tuesday afternoon after investigating the collision that claimed the life of Faria, a 33-year-old Westport resident. Vieira has been living with relatives in Westport recently, previously lived in Riverside, California, according to Melody. Police responded to the area of 653 State Road in Dartmouth just before 7 p.m. Saturday to reports of a pedestrian being struck by a motorist who then fled the scene. Police found Farrier deceased. She was walking east when she was struck from behind and killed, authorities said. Ferry had a six-year-old daughter, enjoyed painting and writing and poetry, according to her cousin, Alyssa Doster. Quote, I just want everyone to know that she was a good mother, end of quote, said Doster, who lives in Fall River. She said Ferry was staying at the Moby Dick Motel with her boyfriend. Dartmouth and Westport Police and Massachusetts State Troopers assigned to the DA's office conducted the investigation. South Coast Rail hearings sparks varied responses. Jeanette Barnes wrote this out of Dartmouth. Some 50 people turned out for a public meeting Tuesday in Dartmouth on phase one of South Coast Rail. Many offered suggestions, praise, or complaints. State transportation officials hosted the meeting in the UMass Dartmouth Library. Phase one would bring commuter trains to Taunton, New Bedford, and Fall River via Middleboro, instead of the previous plan to go through Stoughton. Alexander Silva of Fall River said he wants to see train service open up employment opportunities in the Boston area. He said when he graduated from UMD 6 years ago, he found that most entry-level jobs in his field were in Boston, but with the long distance and a recent grad's unreliable vehicle, making the drive was unrealistic. Only by moving in with his girlfriend and her family in Ashland could he accept a job, he said. Common among many of the complaints was skepticism that phase two, faster electric service through Stoughton, will ever be built once the Middleboro route is done. The Massachusetts Department of Transportation says that's still in the plan and that much of the work for phase one is common to both. Among the skeptics was Aylin Frawley, chairman of the Middleboro Board of Selectmen, who said the board voted Monday night to oppose phase one. His own opposition comes chiefly because DOT has excluded Middleboro from the planning process, he said. He also called the route through his town, quote, a second-rate political solution, end of quote. Quote, the South Coast deserves better, end of quote, he said. Middleboro resident Scott Bernard said DOT is adding too few trains and that trains would be standing room only. DOT representatives replied that double-decker trains would be used to help alleviate crowding. Proponents at DOT say going through Middleborough carries numerous benefits, not the least that service could start in the late 2022 compared to 2030 or later for the Stoughton route. It's also cheaper at $935 million compared to $3.2 billion for Stoughton, and the savings from building the portion between Taunton and the coast earlier means that doing both does not meaningfully raise the overall cost, according to DOT. Proponents also say Phase 1 will reduce round-trip travel time to Boston by an hour a day from a New Bedford compared to commuting by car. Supporter LeVar Williams of Dartmouth, who commutes by air between Washington, D.C. and Boston, takes the Middleborough line south from South Station, said after meeting that funding is available for Phase 1, so he wouldn't advise people to, quote, just hope and pray, end of quote, for something larger that may or may not happen. Phase 1 involves building 6 new stations, Middleborough, Taunton, Freetown, Fall River, New Bedford, with New Bedford getting 2 at King's Highway and the Whale Tooth parking lot on the waterfront. The meeting served to solicit comments on a required environmental report on the project. Written comments are due March 23rd. For details, you can see www.mass.gov/southcoastrail. Another storm to batter the South Coast. Andy Tomolins wrote this, and it's just a general area for South Coast. Just when power is returning to most of southern New England, the region is bracing for another late winter storm. A mix of rain and snow is expected to begin falling Wednesday morning across much of Massachusetts, with mostly rain in New Bedford and the immediate coast, according to the latest forecast from the National Weather Service in Taunton. Quote, it's just a big rainstorm for you, end of quote, in New Bedford, said National Weather Service spokesman Bill Simpson. He noted there's a slight chance of snow when the storm winds down on Thursday. But he said the ground is so warm there will be little to no accumulation. Simpson said the storm will also bring high winds, with gusts approaching 40 miles an hour, but nothing like the destructive winds that battered South Coast, Cape Cod, and much of the state on Friday. If you're traveling inland Wednesday, storm will be a different story. The Weather Service's recent snowfall map, for instance, shows 0 snow accumulating for New Bedford, 6 inches in Providence, 10 inches in Foxborough, 18 inches in Worcester. Once you get north and west of Interstate 495, the storm will bring heavy snow, forecasters said. The height of the storm will be Wednesday evening into Thursday, with snow or raining winding down by late in the day. The Weather Service predicted temperatures would rise to a high of 40 degrees on Wednesday, a low of 35 on Wednesday night. After the storm exits, the forecast for Thursday night is mostly cloudy with a low of 31. Power crews were still at work Tuesday restoring electricity to customers in South Coast communities. They were making some major headway. There were 760 customers without power in Rochester as of 10:30 Tuesday morning, according to Eversource's online power outage map, but only 8 as of 8:30 p.m. Tuesday night. However, in Dartmouth, as of Tuesday night, 78 customers were still without power. That was 3 less than 10 hours earlier. Amid this stormy weather, there are signs that spring is on its way. This Sunday, March 11, is the start of daylight savings time. Golf course management, still in limbo. Michael Bonner wrote this out of New Bedford. Confusion filled the faces of city councilors and residents alike in the council chambers Tuesday night as a special meeting to discuss the Whaling City golf course was adjourned before any business was discussed. Quote, "It's a waste of everybody's time," end of quote, New Bedford resident and golfer Len Roberts said. Quote, "Actually, as a city resident, I'm embarrassed at the whole city council. I'm very embarrassed at the city council. The elective representatives did not do justice on Tuesday," end of quote. The special meeting was called to discharge the City Property Committee from further consideration of W/S Golf Management taking over the operation and management of the Whaling City Golf Course. Ward 2 Councilor Maria Gista, who said she needed more time to think about the motion, proposed an amendment attached to the discharge that would prevent a final vote occurring no sooner than March 8th, the next scheduled City Council meeting. It needed 8 votes to pass. It only received 7. However, if the amendment was handled separately, it would have only needed 6 votes to pass. Discussion would have continued, and no vote would have occurred Thursday. Quote, "I was requested to amend the discharge vote. That was what was asked," end of quote, City Council President Linda Murad said, quote, "No one asked me to separate the 2 votes. Should someone have asked me to separate those 2 votes, there would have been 2 votes," end of quote. Ward 3 Councillor Hugh Dunn, Ward 6 Councillor Joe Lopes, Councillor at Large Deborah Cahillo voted no. With Councillor of Ward 1 Brad Markey not present, the motion fell 1 vote short. Quote, "My vote was based on the fact that I wanted final action on the item tonight," end of quote, Dunn said. Quote, "We've had experts in the room, could have come to a decision. The motion offered precluded that. My goal is making sure the course opens on time for the golfing season," end of quote. A quote again. "My issue is I didn't want to be hamstrung to say just because we were in agreement tonight, we waited a couple more days," end of quote, Lopes said. Quote, "There's a time constraint with this. It needs to go to licensing and everything else. It only delays it a couple of days, but it's a couple of days," end of quote. Quote, "I was ready to make my decision tonight," end of quote, Cahillo said. Quote, "I was ready to hear from everybody tonight, and I did not want anybody to come back on this issue," end of quote. Those in attendance, including the owner of W/Golf Management, Bruce Carlson, lingered at City Hall for a while after the decision, bewildered at what occurred. Quote, "I don't know what to say. I never heard anything like that. I don't know what they're doing," end of quote, Carlson said. He said he would like to begin ownership as soon as possible, with the golf season beginning in April. Quote, "There's a lot of upfront work to do before," end of quote, Carlson said. Quote, "It takes a while. We'd like to get in there as soon as possible, if we're going to get in there at all," end of quote. Johnson Golf Management opted out of its agreement with the city last year and declined to provide a specific reason. The item of approving W/S Golf Management will now be heard in front of the City Property Committee on March 12th. It could then be sent back to the City Council, which is meeting March 22, with a recommendation. Another option is after the City Properties meeting, another special City Council meeting could be held to speed up the process. Quote, "That gives us a lot of confidence after what we saw Tuesday," end of quote, Roberts said. We are now midway through our reading. This is Penny reading you the Standard Times for today, Wednesday, March 7th. I will now read the obituaries that are in the Standard Times for today. Arthur N. Picard, age 95. This comes to us from Fall River. Arthur Norman Picard, 95, of Fall River, husband of the late Martha C. Howd Picard, died March 4th. A proud Army veteran, he served in the Philippines and New Guinea. His funeral will be held Saturday at 9 a.m. from the Eau Claire Funeral Home, 690 South Main Street, Fall River. A funeral mass at St. Stanislaus Church, Fall River, at 10 a.m. Interment in the Sacred Heart Cemetery, New Bedford, and visitation is Friday from 4 to 8 p.m. Frederick W.R. Melanchon, age 95, out of New Bedford. Frederick William Raymond Ray Melanchon of New Bedford died March 2nd. He is survived by his wife, Mary Lorraine. In accordance with his wishes, he will be cremated and a celebration of Ray's life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are by the Donaghy Hathaway Funeral Home, 465 County Street in New Bedford. Craig J. Bailey, age 38. This comes from Jersey City, New Jersey. Craig Joseph Bailey died March 2nd. He was born in Ridgewood, New Jersey, and resided with his wife, Emma, in Jersey City, and he was formerly a lifelong resident of Dartmouth. John K. Hansen, age 96. This comes from New Bedford. John K. Hansen died March 6th at the home at the Quincy home of his son, Gary, daughter-in-law, Brenda, his devoted caregivers for the past 2.5 years. He's the husband of the late Marion Stanford Hansen. Visiting hours will be held at the Sweeney Brothers Home for Funerals, 1 Independence Avenue, Quincy, on Thursday, March 8th, 4 to 7 p.m. Relatives and friends are invited to attend at the request of the family. Interment will take place privately in Acushnet Cemetery. And that concludes the reading of the obituaries in these Standard Times for today. Out of Dedham, a jury selection is underway in the, quote, Puppy Doe trial. This came from Sean Philip Cotter's offering to the Patriot Ledger, Dedham. Jury selection began Tuesday in the, quote, Puppy Doe case, a high-profile animal abuse trial that the judge expects to last weeks. Radoslaw Sawaski, a Polish national now behind bars on 2 unrelated convictions, is standing trial on 12 counts of animal cruelty, 1 count of misleading police stemming from the abuse of Puppy Doe, a young female pit bull who was brutally beaten and near death when she was found in a Quincy park nearly 5 years ago. The trial will probably take 2.5 to 3 weeks, Judge Beverly Kenone told the prospective jurors. The judge and attorney spent the day Tuesday winnowing down the jury pool, intending on paneling 16 jurors. The jury selection process will continue Wednesday, with the trial beginning on Thursday. Kenone asked all the jurors several questions to begin the selection process. First, she asked how many potential jurors had heard of the case. Of the approximately 60 prospective jurors, 36 they'd heard of this case before, 15 said they already had formed opinions on the case, 10 said they may have biases against Sawaski, who once lived in New Bedford. A water leak forces pilgrims shut down. Michael Norton wrote this out of State House News in Boston. A likely water leak inside the feed water heating system prompted Pilgrim Nuclear Station in Plymouth to shut down overnight. It's the latest setback for a plant that is fueled up for the last time and is scheduled to close on May 31, 2019. The duration of the shutdown is unknown. According to Entergy, Pilgrim spokesman Patrick O'Brien, the indication of the likely water leak spurred plant officials to take the station off the grid and begin powering down at 3 a.m. Quote, the heater with the suspected leak, known as the fifth point, is located inside the condenser bay, and due to this location, the unit needed to be shut down to allow for a proper inspection and repair under the safest conditions possible, end of quote, O'Brien said in a statement. O'Brien said plant employees and public, quote, remain safe at all times, end of quote. The nuclear plant powered throughout last weekend's nor'easter after employees at the coastal plant topped off fuel supplies, removed items that could become airborne, worked with Eversource and ISO New England to ensure the reliability of off-site power sources, established storms coverage to ensure adequate plant staffing, according to O'Brien. More than 21,000 electricity companies in Massachusetts remained without power Tuesday morning, including 41% of customers in Pembroke, 34% of Norwell, 34% of Rochester, 33% of Halifax, and 26% of Scituate. On Friday night, during the peak of a severe nor'easter that toppled trees and featured widespread flooding, more than 450,000 customers were without power. The second nor'easter in a week is forecast to move through the region on Wednesday. And another article relating to a nor'easter packing heavy snows and wind threatens new outages. Again, out of Boston, utility workers took advantage of milder temperatures and sunshine Tuesday in their scramble to restore power to the thousands of customers around the Northeast as another snowy, blowy nor'easter threatened a new round of outages. The National Weather Service issued a winter storm warning that stretched from eastern Pennsylvania to most of New England from late Tuesday night into Thursday morning. Heavy wet snow, gusting winds could take down trees and snap power lines already weakened from last week's storm, adding to stress for customers who've gone days without power. The outages turned to outrage for a New Jersey man whose home has been without electricity since Friday, who threatened to kidnap a utility company employee, blow up a substation. Robert Winter, age 63, was charged with making terrorist threats, according to the police in Vernon. More than a foot of snow is forecast for some interior areas, the Weather Service said. In Pennsylvania's Pocono Mountains, parts of western Mass could see up to 18 inches. Damaging winds are in the forecast, with gusts of up to 60 miles per hour at Cape Cod, 45 miles per hour at the Jersey Shore, 30 miles per hour around suburban Philadelphia. Depending on the storm's track, communities along the Interstate 95 corridor could see either lots of rain, heavy snow, or a mix of each. Transportation departments in Philadelphia and Boston loaded up salt trucks, pre-treated roads Tuesday afternoon. Some airlines already were waiving a ticket changes fees for airports in the storm's projected path, such as Newark, Philadelphia, Boston, and New York's JFK. Amtrak said it was canceling some train service Wednesday. Regional rail trains in Philadelphia will operate on a weekend schedule on Wednesday. School districts and municipal operations around Pennsylvania and Connecticut already were announcing they would close Wednesday. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, and Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf declared states of emergency. The National Weather Service said travel is not recommended Wednesday, urged people to stay off the roads to allow emergency crews, cleanup crews, do their job, and some areas will get as much as 2 to 3 inches an hour. Workers in a coastal Massachusetts town hit particularly hard by last week's nor'easter were working frantically to head off further damage from another severe storm coming this week. Public works crews and private contractors in Duxbury reinforced the town's crumbling seawalls with truckloads of large rocks on Tuesday, but Department of Public Works Director Pete Butkus called it a short-term fix. U.S. greets talks of North Korea nuclear concessions with hope and skepticism. This is out of Washington, D.C. from the Associated Press. President Donald Trump greeted North Korea's reported willingness to negotiate away its atomic weapons with both hope and skepticism on Tuesday, insisting a potential diplomatic breakthrough be tested against the North's long history of deception and threats to target U.S. cities with nuclear missiles. Quote, "I really believe they're sincere," end of quote, Trump said at a White House news conference, sounding more optimistic than his intelligence chief, Dan Coats, who told a Senate hearing he has, quote, "very, very low confidence," end of quote, that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un intends to give up his nuclear arms. Quote, "Maybe this is a breakthrough. I seriously doubt it," end of quote, Coates said. A senior South Korean presidential advisor said Tuesday that Kim expressed a willingness to discuss nuclear disarmament and halt nuclear and missile tests during future talks with the United States. The North didn't confirm those concessions, which would amount to a dramatic about-face for a nation that has frequently vowed to preserve its nuclear arsenal at any cost. Chung E-young, the South Korean official who spoke after participating in talks with Kim in Pyongyang, also said the North Korean dictator had agreed to meet with South Korea's president at a border village in late April. Trump, who last fall told Secretary of State Rex Tillerson he was, quote, "wasting his time," end of quote, trying to talk with the North, tweeted Tuesday that, quote, "possible progress," end of quote, had been made in North Korea's capital and that all sides were making serious efforts. He added, quote, "maybe false hope, but the U.S. is ready to go hard in either direction," end of quote. Later, in an Oval Office photo session with Swedish Prime Minister Stefan Löfven, Trump said the North Koreans, quote, "seem to be acting positively," end of quote, but that the prospects will be clearer when diplomacy moves to the next stage. Quote, "we've come certainly a long way, at least rhetorically, with North Korea," end of quote, Trump said, of the possibility for peacefully resolving the nation's deep differences, he said, quote, "it'd be a great thing for the world, would be a great for North Korea, it'd be a great thing for the peninsula, but we'll see what happens," end of quote. In Chung's account, Kim indicated he would not need to keep nuclear weapons if military threats against North Korea were removed and his nation received a credible security guarantee. That suggests the possibility Kim will insist in any deal that the U.S. withdraw its nearly 28,000 troops from South Korea. The North sees those forces and their periodic exercises with South Korean troops as a threat to invade the North. The White House issued a brief statement from Vice President Mike Pence suggesting nothing has changed in that area. A U.S. official said there were no plans to scrap the war games envisioned for next month. Britain vows a response if Russia is behind the ex-spy's collapse. This came from Salisbury, England. Britain's counterterrorism police took over an investigation Tuesday into the mysterious collapse of a former spy and his daughter, now fighting for their lives. The government pledged a, quote, robust, end of quote, response if suspicions of Russian state involvement are proven. Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson said he wasn't yet accusing anyone of harming Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia. The two Russians collapsed Sunday on a bench in southern England after coming into contact with unknown substance. He stressed Britain would act, possibly limit its participation in the upcoming soccer World Cup in Russia if Moscow's hand is shown. Quote, I say to governments around the world that no attempt to take innocent life on UK soil will go either unsanctioned or unpunished, end of quote, Johnson told lawmakers in the House of Commons. British counterism specialists took control of the case from local police trying to unravel the mystery of why the two collapsed in Salisbury, 90 miles southwest of London. Both Skripal, age 66, and his 33-year-old daughter are in critical condition in the intensive care unit of the Salisbury District Hospital, Wiltshire, police said. As Trump weighs a tariff, U.S. steelmakers are enjoying rising profits. This is out of Washington. The Trump administration has chosen an odd time to offer special protection to the U.S. steel industry. As President Donald Trump prepares to impose a 25% tax on imported steel, America's steelmakers are actually faring pretty well. The U.S. steel industry last year earned more than $2.8 billion, up from $714 million in 2016 and a loss in 2015, according to the Commerce Department. And the industry added more than 8,000 jobs between January 17 and January 18. Even before Trump mentioned the tariff last Thursday, the price of the benchmark U.S.-made hot-rolled steel had reached the highest level since May 2011, according to S&P Global Platts, and the price surged even higher on the tariff news. Quote, the industry isn't doing as bad as their press release say it is, end of quote, said steel analyst Charles Bradford, president of Bradford Research. Quote, any time world economic growth is over 3%, the steel industry usually does okay, end of quote. The International Monetary Fund said the global economy grew 3.7% last year, expects it to grow 3.9% in 2018. The U.S. economy grew 2.3% last year, an improvement on a 1.5% growth in 2016. Also raising demands for steel, Florida and Texas are rebuilding after last year's ruinous hurricanes. Ned Hill, professor at Ohio State University's John Glenn College of Public Affairs, who studies economic development, says that after decades of cost-cutting and restructuring, American steel is, quote, a vastly improved industry. It seems to me they've established a competitive equilibrium, end of quote. In the 1980s, American steelmakers needed 10.1 man-hours to produce a ton of steel. Now they need 1.5 man-hours. Increased productivity means today's steel mills don't need as many workers. Steel industry employment peaked at 650,000 in 1953, and by the start of this year, the steelmakers employed just 143,000. The industry definitely faces long-term problems. Massive overproduction by China has flooded world markets with steel, kept world prices lower than they would have been. Some countries subsidize their steel producers and allow them to sell steel at an unfairly lower price. Trump administration again lifts the elephant trophy ban out of Washington. The Trump administration has quietly decided once again to allow Americans to import the body parts of African elephants shot for sport, despite presidential tweets decrying the practice as a, quote, horror show. President Donald Trump personally intervened in November when the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service first said it would lift an Obama-era ban on elephants imported from Zimbabwe and Zambia. The agency contends that encouraging wealthy big game hunters to kill the threatened species would help raise money for conservation programs. Quote, big game trophy decision will be announced next week, but we'd be very hard-pressed to change my mind that this horror show in any way helps conservation of elephants or any other animal, end of quote. Trump tweeted on November 19, placing the policy on hold after a public backlash to the earlier decision. More than 3 months later, the federal agency overseen by Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke issued a letter dating March 1st announcing the importation of elephant trophies will now be approved on a, quote, case-by-case basis, end of quote. The letter cites a December ruling in a long-running lawsuit challenging the ban filed by the Safari Club International and the lobby arm of the National Rifle Association. Zinke recently told People privately that Trump has called him several times to discuss what to do about elephant trophies. Neither the Interior Department nor Fish and Wildlife issued a media release over last weekend to announce the decision, which was quickly condemned by environmental advocates. Quote, the Trump administration is trying to keep these crucial trophy import decisions behind closed doors. That's totally unacceptable, end of quote, said Tanya Zanrib, International Legal Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. Quote, elephants aren't meant to be trophies. They're meant to roam free, end of quote. Trump's two adult sons are trophy hunters. A photo of Donald Trump Jr. holding a knife in the bloodied severed tail of an elephant he reportedly killed in Zimbabwe in 2011 has sparked outrage amongst animal rights activists. Zinke is an avid hunter who, after arriving in Interior last year, ordered the arcade game, quote, Big Bucks Hunter Pro, end of quote, to be installed in the employee cafeteria at the agency's Washington headquarters, a move, he said, would promote wildlife and habitat conservation. Trump's economic aide Cohen departs after trade disagreement. This comes to us from Associated Press out of Washington. Top economic advisor Gary Cohn is leaving the White House after breaking with President Donald Trump on trade policy, the latest in a string of high-level departures from the West Wing. Cohn, the director of the National Economic Council, has been the leading internal opponent to Trump's planned tariffs on imports of steel and aluminum, working to orchestrate an 11th-hour effort in recent days to get Trump to reverse course. But Trump resisted those efforts and reiterated Tuesday he will be imposing tariffs in the coming days. Cohn's departure comes amid a period of unparalleled tumult in the Trump's administration, and aides worry that more staffers may soon head for the doors. The announcement came hours after Trump denied there was chaos in the White House. Trump maintained that his White House has, quote, tremendous energy, end of quote. But multiple White House officials said Trump has been urging anxious aides to stay. Quote, Everyone wants to work in the White House, under quote, Trump said during a joint press conference with Swedish Prime Minister Stefan Löfven. They all want a piece of the Oval Office, end of quote. In a statement, Cohen said it was his honor to serve in the administration and, quote, enact pro-growth economic policies to benefit the American people, end of quote. Trump praised Cohen, despite the disagreement on trade, issuing a statement saying Cohen has, quote, served this country with great distinctions, end of quote. Cohen is a former Goldman Sachs executive who joined the White House after departing the Wall Street firm with a $285 million payout. He played a pivoted role in helping Trump enact a sweeping tax overhaul, coordinating with members of Congress. Cohen's departure is a blow to Capitol Hill Republicans and business groups, as they were hoping that Trump might listen to their worries on tariffs. Earlier Tuesday, House Speaker Paul Ryan had said talks with the White House were, quote, ongoing, end of quote. He was, quote, encouraged, end of quote, that the White House would adjust course. Quote, I hate to see Gary go, end of quote, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told the Associated Press. I think he did a great job, end of quote. Senator Pat Toomey, Republican, Pennsylvania, who's trying to persuade the administration to target the steel and aluminum tariffs as narrowly as possible, acknowledged his side of the argument was increasingly outnumbered in the administration. Quote, I'm sorry to see him go, end of quote, Toomey said, calling Cohen, quote, a very important voice in encouraging free trade, end of quote. Joss Bolton, the president and CEO of the Business Roundtable, which opposes the coming tariffs, called Cohen's exit, quote, a real loss for President Trump and the American people, end of quote. Trump loved to boast about the former executive's wealth, but Cohen's tenure in the White House was rocky. Cohen nearly departed the administration last summer after he was upset by the president's comments about the racial violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. Cohen, who is Jewish, wrote a letter of resignation but never submitted it. Quote, citizens standing up for equality and freedom can never be equated with white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and the KKK, end of quote, Cohen told the Financial Times at that time. Quote, I believe this administration can and must do better in consistently and unequivocally condemning these groups and do everything we can to heal the deep division that exists in our communities, end of quote. Cohen told other White House aides in recent weeks that he would have little reason to stay if Trump followed through with his tariff plans. According to a White House official familiar with his views, the official spoke on condition of anonymity. Quote, I mean, it's no secret that he disagreed with Trump on the trade, and he was opposed to the policy, end of quote, said Stephen Moore, who served as an economic advisor to Trump's campaign. The White House did not immediately announce a replacement for Cohen, whose deputy, Jeremy Katz, departed in January. Among those under consideration for Cohen's job are CNBC commentator Larry Kudlow, Office of Management and Budget Director Mike Mulvaney, according to persons familiar with the discussions. In a tweet earlier Tuesday, Trump sought to portray himself as the architect of the White House staff changes, writing, quote, I still have some people that I want to change, always seeking perfection, end of quote. Did you know that Frederick Douglass Jr., who was born March 3, 1842, to Frederick and Anna Douglass in New Bedford, he and his brother Louis were printers and partners in Washington, D.C. for many years? We are now at the end of our hour. This has been Penny reading you the Standard Times for today, Wednesday, March 7th. I would like to remind you of our telephone number. It's 508-539-2030. Please call us with your comments, your suggestions, and your questions. We thank you for listening and wish you a great day.